People.
Don't you know?
Places.
Don't you know?
Events.
Don't you know?
From the campus of Winona State University, KQAL-FM is proud to present...
Don't you know?
Hi, Terry Tenseth here. I have special guest Patrick Merrick, and we're going to talk about hauntings of Winona. Now, Patrick, you're a bit of an authority on haunted places.
Now, Terry, I'm a specialist in the ghost of Heffron Hall.
There you go.
I know just a little bit about, because other people seem to have the need to come and talk to me when they have a haunted episode, but I'm a specialist. I'm the self-proclaimed expert on the ghost of Heffron Hall at St. Mary's University.
So excellent.
So that's what I kind of like to talk about.
Let's do it.
You know, if you've got demons, we can talk later.
Okay.
And maybe we can figure something out.
All right. So I got plenty of this.
So what, yeah. Alert the media.
Well, let's start at the beginning. I believe that there was a priest and a bishop interaction, or I could be wrong about that, right? And there was a shooting of some sort.
Many colleges have ghosts.
Right.
Okay. And the ghost of Heffron Hall, St. Mary's, has a ghost, and they also have a genealogy to go with the ghost. Yes, you are right. Many people know that there was an event. Okay. 1915, August 27th, Bishop Heffron. Probably one of the most respected big man in Winona, the guy that started St. Mary's College, second bishop in the Diocese of Winona, started like 14 or 15 schools. He was a very powerful figure. As a matter of fact, that they said in those days that the diocesan priest in the diocese went on answered to the bishop, and the bishop answered only to God. Okay, so he's saying Mass at what is now St. Mary's Hall. He had a private chapel on the second floor. He was in the most holy part of the Catholic Mass, the consecration, when a priest from his diocese came in, burst in, wearing a Prince Albert suit, having a five-shot Smith & Wesson revolver, and proceeded to try to kill the bishop while he was saying Mass. Big stuff. I mean, stuff that you just, I mean, even today, you think, man, if that happened today, even with all the crazy stuff we got, that would get people's attention. Imagine what it was like in 1915.
Sounds like a Western.
It was crazy. This guy had a lot of interactions with the bishop. His name was Father Lachey. Louis Lachey was his name. And he's one of those guys that rejected authority. They say that, you know, if Bishop Heffron had a litmus test, that Lachey would turn it bright red. Basically did everything he could to irritate the bishop. And the bishop didn't have a lot of patience, but in doing research, he probably had more patience with Lachey than I'd ever seen. He had a bunch of incidents, and then finally, it was like the immovable object against the irresistible force. I would say that probably Heffron was the immovable object. Basically, it all comes to a head where Lachey had... You know, he constantly was trying to get money out of the bishop. He's like, you know, I need money for my food and clothes, you know. And you know, and the bishop's like, well, you know, I'll send you some money, but don't ask me for money anymore, because the last place I gave, he was like in an orphanage or something, and he bombed out of that job. And so then Lachey decides he wants a parish. He wants his own parish. He wants to be a pastor of a parish. And Heffron wasn't going to give it to him, you know, and it got back and forth and back and forth. And so finally, Lachey shows up, coincidentally, the day before the big event, 1914, and he's going to have it out with Heffron. Now, let me just tell you a little bit. Heffron wasn't exactly Mr. Nice Guy. They would be sitting around a table with all the priests having dinner, and he'd everybody serve but Lachey. He wouldn't serve them. You know? So anyway, basically, Lachey meets with them, and Heffron says, you know what? I think maybe you should get a job at a farm, because, you know, you can't interact with people. You'd be better with farm animals.
Oh.
Sends Lachey into a rage. That night, there's two priests, and they're playing some type of a card game, gin rummy or whatever. And he's raging about the damn bishop this, the damn bishop that. A guy by the name of Father Bernie. And he kept this quiet for 40 years. And he was witness. He was one playing cards. Father Bernard Kramer, he was an assistant at St. Joseph's Church in Winona. Okay, this is what happened. So Lachey's pacing around saying, damn bishop. He turned to Kramer, who's playing bridge, and Lachey said,
What would you do, Bernie, if the bishop refused you an appointment? Intent on the game and probably annoyed at the pacing priest, Kramer replied, I'd shoot the son of a blank. Mm-hmm. And at that same instant, he threw down a card and a table. And it was the three of spades. He thought about this for many years because, indeed, the next day, Lachey shows up and tries to kill the bishop. Let's talk about this, okay? Yeah. So the bishops just got done with consecration. Lachey comes in, squeezes off a shot as he's walking towards the bishop. The bishop doesn't, like, run away. He's like, you're going to go to hell. Serious. He's just standing wow. there. He's like, get out of here, you know? So Lachey gets a little closer, squeezes off another shot. It lodges in the tabernacle. They dug it out later. Okay, the third time he shoots, hits the bishop in the leg. A guy comes in to me. He's got a gun. He's shooting. I'm out of there. I'm trying to get out. The bishop starts coming towards Lachey like he's going to try to get him. Lachey reaches up. He's almost at the bishop, and he squeezes off a shot. Well, the bishop, instead of, you know, he tries to hit Lachey, okay? And because he did that, he moved the gun a little bit, and he ended up getting shot in the lung. If he hadn't done that, he would probably been shot in the heart. He was so close that his vestment caught on fire, okay? Well, Lachey goes, I'm getting out of here, you know, so he takes off. The bishop, he's been shot twice, goes after him. He runs after Lachey. So he's on his way, you know. Lachey, obviously, a little faster. He has not been shot. He's younger, you know. He's gone. And one of the priests downstairs came up and he heard the gunshots. And he sees the bishop and asks the bishop what's going on. And he says, well, you know, I've just been shot, Lachey. He goes, well, what are you doing? Are you trying to get him? He goes, no, I'm just trying to keep him from hurting anyone else. He was going to. Anyway, so Lachey's gone. The bishop goes back into the chapel and cleans up the mess, okay? Then he goes down. He walks over to his room at Cotter Hall. Well, anyway, he takes off, and they called up the police department. The police department showed up at St. Mary's in 11 minutes, okay? Pretty good.
That's pretty good for back then.
I think that's pretty good. Plus, I mean, they're like... The bishop got shot during mass. So the chief of police shows up with his son and another guy outside to look in the window, and the guy can see Lachey. He's packing up his valise. He wants to get out, and he's putting his gun in the valise. Okay, and he's also, by the way, he had a sawed-off shotgun in his room. Okay.
Oh wow.
So anyway, they knock on the door. He won't answer. They say it's the police, and Lachey decides to give up. Okay, so he gives up. He goes quietly. Meanwhile, Charlie Mayo, one of the Mayo brothers. He shows up on train, treats the bishop, takes out the bullet. The bishop lives for another 13 years, okay? Then we have the trial of the century. I mean, it was standing room only, you know? Republican Herald headlines like, crazed priest shoots bishop during mass, an insane fit, you know? Bishop Heffern shot twice by Louis M. Lachey visiting a terror site, turns weapon on benefactor, an insane fit. I love it. Anyway, I mean, he gets convicted on basis of insanity, goes to the St. Peter's home for the insane. This will give you just a little bit of a window into the haunted playland of Father Lachey. He writes this letter where he apologizes to the bishop. Okay? Mm-hmm. Would you like to hear it, Terry?
Yeah, please.
Okay. Can I do it in a French accent?
Do it in a French accent.
Cool. Okay. It is with pain and great sorrow that I come to apologize for the unfortunate deed which must have plunged your heart into deep affliction. I have no clear remembrance of it. I sincerely beg pardon for whatever guilt may have been mine, and I thank God it is no worse. Here's the part. Considering the past, when you refused me food, clothes, shelter, and care in sicknesses and helplessness, you said that you did not care for my life or soul to find work with some farmer, and that you knew I was crazy. What was then left to me but death in the gutter of insanity? Nice apology, Louise.
Yeah.
Great job,
there
man.
There you go.
Way to get that bishop feeling better about you. Okay, so 1919, you know, so we're like, four years after the event. The doctors at St. Peter's say, hey, you know what? He's cured. You know, we should let him out. Maybe we should just deport him back to France. But they have to get Bishop Heffern's permission. He goes, nah, I'm thinking we're going to leave him there. And so Lachey stayed in St. Peter's Hospital.
died of heart attack January 10th, 1943, between the hours of 1:30 and 2. Remember those hours? They're very important for later. He's 84 years old, and he spent 28 years in the asylum. Meanwhile, Heffron, he died at 68 and 27. He died of cancer. All right, so now if there is a ghost of Heffron Hall, chances are that it was Louise, it's Louise Lachey, if there is one. And the reason I bring this up is because the ghost of Heffron Hall, it's not like Casper the Friendly Ghost. It's not some friendly apparition trying to help students with their homework. It's very unusual as far as ghost stories go, just because of the evilness of the stories and all the violence and everything else. So if there is a ghost, it's probably Lachey. And probably, I would say, it's because of all the brooding that he did, all that time, all that negative energy that he was able to put while he was in the asylum. Now you say, okay, well, Bishop Heffron died in 29. You know, we're talking another 20 years. Heffron Hall wasn't even built when Heffron died. Why would all these things happen at Heffron Hall? Well, it's named after Bishop Heffron. Maybe there is some type of a...
Grudge, whatever.
I don't know how these things work. Okay, let's talk about... my experiences with this and why I became interested in it. I graduated from St. Mary's in 1979. And while I was at school, it was like, you know, we heard stories about the ghost. I was kind of interested, but the stories we heard were always like in Heffron, they went into the bathroom at 1 o'clock in the morning, 1:30, and they turned on the faucet, and instead of water, blood came out, stuff like that. And then we heard stories about an electrocuted, a preset spontaneously
combusted.
Mm-hmm. You probably heard that.
Yeah,
part,
I've heard that one.
You know, the nuns found him the next morning, and there he was in the bed.
In a form of a cross.
I didn't hear about that part. He's charred. He's totally charred, but the sheets under him aren't charred, and he's reading the Bible, and the Bible's kind of charred too, but they could read the passage, and it said... It was from Revelation, and they shall come again to the sound of trumpets.
Mm-hmm.
Which is supposedly, that guy was Father Edward Lynch, and him and Lachey were supposedly rivals. Lachey supposedly didn't like Lynch because he likes sports. Okay, and so, and then Lachey supposedly would say to Lynch, their friendly little greeting across campus, and he shall come again to the sound of trumpets. He'd say, you know, hey, okay, buddy. Hey, Luis.
Wow.
Maybe we should have a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
So anyways, so I'd heard these stories, you know, and I never lived in Heffron until my junior year. And I was in a dorm called Fourth Mary's, which was a teak party dorm. And high ceilings, crazy. It's an office complex. Now they dropped all the ceilings down, but really high ceilings. And the teak boys had more money than anyone else so that they would put lofts up and bars. It was a different day, and they'd have like mixed drink parties and stuff. You just couldn't get anything done there. Just impossible. I wanted a private room. There's only one room on campus available. Happened to be on Third Heffron. Happened to be the only room on that floor that didn't have a sink, and it was right next to the boarded up janitor's closet of Heffron Hall fame. But I didn't really care. I was like, what? Okay, I'm out of there. So I lived on Fourth Mary's, so I had to take all my stuff from... There was not an elevator on either one of these dorms, all the way down four floors and then up three floors. A buddy of mine at Fourth Mary says, hey, you want some help? His name's Patrick Hanahan. Want some help? I go, sure. Well, I was so stupid. I mean, I had these big bricks that I used for my bookcase, you know, like those, you know, like you've seen in construction. So we're carrying these bricks down four floors up, you know. Anyway, so Patrick's cool. He's helped me, and the whole time we're doing that. We get to walk in Heffron. If you walk down First Heffron, you walk by all these portraits of mostly dead presidents of St. Mary's, you know? And so we start talking about the ghost of Heffron. We're talking about the stuff that we knew, the stuff we'd heard, you know? And then when we got to my room, we decided, let's make it spooky. Let's try to make it as spooky as possible. So he helped me spookify the room, you know? So anyway, so he takes off, you know, it was second semester. I might've seen him. And then the next thing I heard over that summer, he was at a pond, and there was like a waterfall, and he dove into the waterfall and never came up. He never came up alive. I mean, he broke his neck. So that was the last time I saw him alive. He helped me move into the ghost room at St. Mary's and becoming part of this tar baby that is the ghost of Heffron Hall.
Way to go, Patrick.
Hey, well, I don't think I can blame me for that. Okay, so anyway, so it's that second semester. It is probably late April night, and I'm sleeping. It's like 1:30 in the morning. It's, you know, there's like a thunderstorm. It was really hot out. And I have this dream, very vivid dream. Dreamt that something was trying to choke me. Okay, I'm having trouble breathing. I look up, and then there's this figure above me, a dark cowled figure above me in the bed, and he's choking me. First of all, I'm like thinking, this is the worst dream that I have ever had. And then I think, I got to wake up or I'm going to die. And so I'm serious. And so I woke, I can remember it like it was yesterday. So then I wake up and there's no dark cowled figure in my room, but my bed sheet is wrapped around my neck. Ugh. And was attached to the bed. And it was the bed sheet that was choking me, something which has never happened before.
Well, how would it?
And never happened since. So I'm like, that's pretty weird. So then I started getting interested in the ghost of Heffern Hall, and I was editor of the Cardinal, the St. Mary's newspaper. So I started to look into it, and basically it was impossible to get any information about the ghost. You just couldn't. The ghost was persona non grata at St. Mary's and had been ever since the big Nexus article that happened down in 1969 that had some anecdotal stuff in it or whatever, but I mean, it made the ghost of Heffern Hall. I mean, it was like throwing gasoline on a match or something. I mean, they wanted the kids who wrote the articles to be on Johnny Carson and stuff. So, I mean, basically all the records were grabbed. There's stuff in the archives of the diocese that they still won't let people see. I knew the guy that was the head of the library and the archives, and he was like one of my favorite profs, okay? His name was Brother Paul Ostendorf. I went up to him, and I go, this guy helped me so much. The first couple of years, this is before the days of, you know, computers and stuff. We had to go to the Reader's Guide for periodical literature to find stuff. Okay, so, I mean, Brother Paul, he always went to him, and he always was this kindly guy that would help me out. And so I start to ask him about, I go, Brother, you know, I'd like to write a story about the ghost of Heffern Hall. I'm interested in it. I'd like to do a, you know, background story. And also this guy that's always been Mr. Gentle, he gets real cold. He goes, I don't think that's such a good idea. And I go, well, why not? And he goes, well, I don't think it's good that you make fun of a deranged person. You know, basically that this Lachey was deranged. And I don't think that's a good idea. And so I go like, well, can I see your file? You know, I'd just like to look at it. And so he goes into the archives and he comes out with this little file, you know, and it says, on the file, there's like, look inside, and there's like three things inside of it. You know, one is a daily news story from like 5 years before. There's nothing in it. I mean, it was just nothing. And on the top of the file, it goes, Ghost of Heffern Hall, Brother Paul O. has a complete, file on this phenomenon in his office. Contact BPO if data is needed. Well, I'm looking like, you know, and everybody else that went in there saw that same note, and it drove us all crazy. We're like, I want to see the real Ghost of Heffern Hall file.
Now you know.
Okay, so anyway, I mean, it's getting late in the semester. I had other fish to fry. Finals were looming. Brother Paul didn't want me to write the story, so I didn't write it. I just said, you know what? I'm backing off. Well, what happens then? I go through all these years, you know, I work at the Winona Post. I'm always thinking about it. Always thinking the story that I always wanted to write. Well, what happens? Brother Paul dies. Oh. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the guy that's the archivist was one of my favorite profs from St. Mary's. And I had the poor guy that's the public relations guy up at St. Mary's. We both had kids in Cub Scouts, and we'd go on campouts and stuff. And I go, I really would love to write that story. What's the chance of me getting permission? And he'd always say, don't even try. They're not even going to do it. Well, I mean, I tried it again, and he calls me back, and he goes, you know what? You're not going to believe this. Brother Lewis gave permission. You've got permission. You can write the story about the ghost of Heffern Hall. I mean, I'm the first one. He goes, but he'd appreciate it if you'd kind of lay off the stuff about the deranged priest. Or if you'd soften up the deranged priest angle. I'm like, I'm there. So I had access to the alumni. I got addresses from the alumni. I got into the archives, got the complete archives. And the archivist actually let me take some stuff out of it, which was
nice.
He let me out the secret door, the back of the library. So I'm sitting there, and I got back to my office, and I copied everything. So I had the amazing, thick, my own copy of the Ghost of Heffern Hall file. And I'm getting ready to write the story. And I'm writing, and I'm ready. Got all my interviews. Sitting in my office, put on some spooky music just to get myself in the mood. You know, and then I'm thinking, you know what? I got one more question to ask. I'm going to call the archives up. Phone rings, and there's an answering machine voice, and it's Brother Paul Ostendorf's voice. You know, I'm sitting in his office, all this stuff that I know he's going to hate me having. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And I haven't returned it all yet. I mean, I've got, you know, original copies of the next. And he goes, here's, hello, you've reached Brother Paul Ostendorf's phone. If you'd like to leave a message, leave it after the tone. Well, I'm sitting there, I almost left him a message. Like, brother, I'm sorry. Anyway, so then I didn't. And I called back and I recorded it. So I called Dr. Crozier, the archivist. And I go, you know, I tried to call you. And you were out of the office. I'm sorry. I go, you might want to change that answering machine message. It's been like almost a year since Brother Paul died. He goes, you know, I keep trying to erase it, and it keeps coming back. This is the same guy that says, other colleges have football teams. We have a ghost.
A big thank you to Patrick Merrick for coming in and sharing with us the story of the ghost of Heffron Hall. We're not quite done with him yet. Stay tuned for next week, where Patrick talks more about his research and different people's experiences with which he has titled The Unholy Ghost of Heffron Hall.
Thanks for listening to Don't You Know? Support for this program is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Don't You Know is produced by KQAL-FM to keep you up to date on the people, places, and events in and around Winona. Visit us online at kqal.org.